Gonzo journalist Hunter S. Thompson ended his life at his home in Colorado on Sunday. Thompson's articles were sometimes rambling, often riotous, drug-crazed accounts of first-person exploits, covering everything from politics to the Hells Angels to the Kentucky Derby. And his belief that the journalist should be part of the story made him a cult icon in both the counterculture and the literary world. For the rest of the hour, we remember Hunter S. Thompson's life and work, and if you have a good story to tell about him, you can call us today, and today only, at 202-408-7544. That's a 202 number, 408-7544. Send us an email at totn@npr.org, and we will call you back to join our conversation. With me now is freelance writer Ben Fong Torres from his home in San Francisco. He was an editor at Rolling Stone magazine while Thompson was burning through their expense accounts. Ben, welcome.
Hey, hi.
What was it like to work around Hunter Thompson?
Oh, lots of fun.
Yeah?
He was an adventure. It was a one-man adventure, basically. And he was our first major star, and I think he was treated as such by everybody around him, including a lot of us at Rolling Stone. We just were amazed by his abilities, laughed at his stories, and then we had to deal with the way he turned stories in and met or resisted deadlines.
Resisted deadlines, yeah. I mean, a star and diva, I guess all that goes with it, huh?
Yeah.
How did you manage that? I mean, was it just people sort of throwing up their arms and saying, oh, well, it's Hunter, or were people really furious and trying to get rid of the guy? How'd that go?
A bit of all of that. I don't think any of us ever wanted to get rid of him. We knew right away that he was a franchise player because soon after Fear and Loathing, he...
That's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
And it sold magazines automatically. Yeah. If there was a piece that had Fear and Loathing or Hunter S. Thompson on the cover, that magazine was going to sell a lot more than your regular average rock star.
The story is he came to his style accidentally. He was trying to file, I guess, for Playboy, right, on the Kentucky Derby, and just couldn't do it, threw up his hands, sent in his notes, and that became the story?
Yeah, he wrote about his frustrations and made himself part of the story, and that was the beginning of what became known as Gonzo journalism.
This is a branch of something called first-person journalism, the kind of first-person journalism that Tom Wolfe and others were espousing at the time. Did you recognize it as such at Rolling Stone? Was this its own style, or was this something just eccentric and selling magazines?
Yeah, I think for most of us, it was eccentric, it was singular, it was unique, but it wasn't put into any particular school or style of journalism until media critics came along and decided that we were in the midst of new journalism. And then, of course, Hunter went his own way, found his own alley, and that was Gonzo journalism.
And describe this. So tell us again, give us an example of the kind of stories that he'd file.
Well, at first, he wrote about himself running for sheriff of Aspen, Colorado, which, of course, he did not make, but still had fun running and then writing about running. And then he wrote, I believe, about Oscar Acosta, who was the leader of the Los Angeles Chicano movement, and then Oscar became the character, the Brown Buffalo, as part of his Fear and Loathing series, once he went to Las Vegas to cover a motorcycle race and a seminar on drugs. That became Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. That extended into a couple of parts in late 71 and early 72, and that began pretty much the Hunter Thompson saga.
We are talking today about that very saga with the news that Hunter Thompson apparently committed suicide yesterday at his home in Colorado. My guest for this part of the conversation is Ben Fong Torres, former editor of Rolling Stone magazine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
I'll be right back.
I'm Frank Stacio, sitting in for Neil Conan, and Ben Fong Torres is my guest. Chris is on the line from San Diego. Hi, Chris. You have a question for us?
Right. Can you come up the side of the house? Because I'm right in the middle of
Hey, Chris.
Hello?
Hi,
Hello?
Chris. Yeah, you have a question for Ben Fong Torres?
Yeah. Well, first I'd like to say we're all very sorry. I mean, Hunter S. Thompson, he started a mantra for us in high school, you know, that we would beat our drums by, and it's really sorry that he's gone. But my question is, Thomas Friedman is a good example that comes to mind, somebody who's a first-person journalist who takes himself, you know, it's a little bit more of a serious subject, Buried to Jerusalem and a couple of others. But do you think that somebody like that was influenced by Hunter S. Thompson? And I'll take my question off the line because I'm driving in San Diego rain right now.
Okay, Chris. Thank you. Ben?
Yes. Who is the character, the author he was talking about?
Thomas Friedman.
Oh, I don't even know who that is.
Columnist for the New York Times. But I think what we're talking about here, and if I can take Chris's question the next step, This idea of the new journalism in its sort of most in its raw form was the idea that there's no such thing as objectivity. So why not put the reporter into the story, expose the preferences, and make the writer a character in a story and get at the truth that way through a fictional style.
Now, that's exactly right. If your caller was asking and saying that he saw elements of that in Mr. Friedman's work or in other people's work, which all of us do now, ever since that era of new journalism, then yes, you can credit Hunter S. Thompson. I keep thinking of him as Dr. Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
But you can credit Hunter with a lot of that, because at Rolling Stone, from Jan Wenner on, to all of the writers and journalists that he engaged on the magazine, his thinking really was that as soon as you assign a human being to a story, even though he or she is supposed to be objective, there really is no such thing. Even by the assigning process, when you choose a particular person to cover an event, a speech, whatever it is, you are making a judgment call there, and that's going to color the results of the story. Hunter simply took it another 350 or 60 degrees and went into the story, spinning into the center of it, making himself part of it, if, in fact, no one else came forth, and then adding fictional elements to it as he saw fit to make the story truly engaging.
Let's go to the phones. Clay is on the line from Whitewater, Wisconsin. Hi, Clay.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. You have a question for us or a comment?
I had a quote and a comment quick. The quote from Hunter S. Thompson is, "When the going gets weird, the weird turn pro." And my comment was that we're missing out on a lot of the literary excess of the 60s, and Burroughs, Bukowski, and Thompson are gone. And it's a long time before we're going to see that again, probably.
All right, Clay, thank you very much for your call. But Clay's observation raises this question, Ben, and that is sort of what happened to that movement. It was an exciting movement. As you say, it was an effort to get at the truth in ways that so-called objective journalism was not.
Right.
It was a promising movement. There doesn't seem to be much evidence of that today.
Right.
Is there a legacy?
There was a legacy. There's a generation of copycats, people who try to clone themselves as gonzo journalists, and, of course, all failed miserably. It did also give rise, though, to some talented younger writers who came along, influenced by the likes of probably a balance of Hunter Thompson and Woodward and Bernstein. But then I think the fact-checking element, the anti-plagiarism, as it well should be, came forth, and so people are more guarded about how they present themselves as a journalist. And you also have the litigious nature of society, so that if you screw around with someone's identity or status or whatever, the character, then you are hauled into court. And not only you, but your publisher is hauled in, and with the corporate takeover of most newspapers, that is a big deal. And so it's to be avoided at most costs.
Let's go to the phone.
Very few will take those chances.
Take
now.
The risk, yeah. Adam is on the line from Ann Arbor. Adam?
Hello.
Hi, you have a question for us?
Just a comment. I had a chance as a fawning college student to go track Mr. Thompson down to his watering hole in Woody Creek, Colorado. And it was a great anecdote because it was the night that Magic Johnson had publicly declared that he had the HIV virus. And he was walking around the bar with a woman's wig on, squirting people with a hypodermic needle in a complete haze. And I said, "Hey, Hunter, what do you think about this with Magic Johnson?" And in an instant, he became completely straight, completely lucid, and said, "It's great that it's going to do so much for the community, and it's horrible that it takes someone of that much wealth and power to bring the attention to the issue." And at the same time, he was holding court in the bar, and he often held himself out as a doctor, like Dr. Thompson. And I was watching him mingle with all these people that were my age, and he obviously drew a lot of energy from that. But it was almost like a professor at office hours, the way, it's all these fawning kids looking up to him, but then he was feeding off their energy, too. It was just great. He was a really, really powerful person, and when I heard he died, it brought tears to my eyes, and it's a profound loss.
Thank you very much, Adam, and thank you also, Ben Fong-Torres, an editor at Rolling Stone, currently a freelance writer and a broadcaster in San Francisco. Thanks for talking with us, Ben.
My pleasure.
In Washington, I'm Frank Stachow, NPR News.